she was 18, her father gave her the advice she needed to follow her dreams and become a writer. The next day, he had a heart attack and died in her arms. She did become a writer and a business owner and then a wife and mother. Today, after 13 books, a million of them in print, she's an award-winning syndicated columnist, a radio and TV host, and the owner of two successful companies. And now, Elise is here to help you rebuild your life. Stay tuned. This is gonna be good. This is the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. Lines are open 404-872-0750 or connect with me on Twitter at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Big news this week, or at least it sounds like big news. The negative equity rate for 2013 ended below 20% for the first time in years, according to a Zillow negative equity report. What is negative equity? That is when your house is worth less than the mortgage amount. So you think, this sounds like really amazing news. And unfortunately, it's not quite as amazing as it sounds, right? It is great that we're now below 20%. And at the height of the market, we were at 27%. Of all homeowners with a mortgage, we're underwater. If you don't have a mortgage, there's no way you can be underwater. But if you do have a mortgage, that rate went as high as 27.5% in the fourth quarter of 2012. So now we're down to 19.4%, which is great. Nationally, still just about 10 million homeowners have a mortgage that's worth more than their houses. That's a huge number, a really huge number. But the problem is that we are not seeing that number come down so fast anymore. And the reason is that home prices are not rising so fast anymore. So the last year, we've seen home prices jump up, and yet we're still not seeing it enough to compensate for what's gone on. And that's particularly true in, unfortunately, the Atlanta metropolitan area. Because in some places, we're expecting negative equity to actually rise, like St. Louis, right? St. Louis looks like it might actually go up. However, we're seeing in Atlanta, and this is really scary, a negative equity rate. So nationally we're at 19-point-something%, but in Atlanta, the negative equity rate at the end of 2013 was 35%. So if you look out and you're thinking to yourself, I don't see things getting that much better, you're right on the nose. Because they're not getting that much better. And the effective negative equity rate, okay, so the effective negative equity rate, which includes homes with a mortgage with 20% or less equity in their houses. So let's say you're par and your house is worth about what your mortgage is. That's considered effective negative equity, because when you sell, you're going to have costs. You're going to have the cost of the broker. You're going to have the cost of transfer taxes. You're going to have other kinds of costs that go into it. And so when you sell, you're actually underwater, and you're going to have to come to the table with a check. Well, a cashier's check or cash. Well, you can't bring cash to a closing. That's another story. So the effective negative equity rate in Atlanta is, and you're just going to have to hold on to your seats here, 54.1%. So for all of the improvement we've made in the Atlanta market, more than half of homeowners with a mortgage are underwater, effectively underwater with their mortgage in Atlanta. As I look through the top 25, maybe 30 markets, Atlanta is the highest for effective negative equity. It is even higher than Las Vegas. We are tied with Las Vegas, or slightly under Las Vegas, for the number, the negative equity rate. But the effective negative equity, we are higher. They're at 52%. We're at 54.1%. And as I look over this list, there isn't anywhere that I see that that's worse than Atlanta. Now, what happens for the end of the forecasted negative equity rate for this year? The good news is that by the end of 2014, Zillow is forecasting that the negative equity rate will fall from 35% to 29%. So from more than a third to slightly under a third. And that will be less than Las Vegas. And I think that's pretty much it. Chicago's dreadful as well, just so you know. My own hometown. Our negative equity rate is almost 30%. The effective negative equity rate is 46.2%. It's like number three or number four or five on the list. It's a terrible position to be in as well. But, you know, 54.1% for an effective negative equity rate is just shocking. It's shocking, and it makes it so hard for anything to happen. So this week I was in Boston giving a speech to the New England Association of Realtors National Conference. And Lawrence Yun, who is the Senior Vice President and Chief Economist for the National Association of Realtors, was there to give kind of a market forecast. And he was on before me. And he and I have crossed paths so many times before. He's a very brilliant guy. I'd love to have him on the show. I just think he has a very clear way of explaining exactly what's going on. And so Lawrence was talking about how the market is sort of getting better and sort of not. And it looks like pending home sales are really trending down. And you're just not seeing new construction. And there's some question of what is the underlying strength? You heard Janet Yellen this week of the Fed talk about what's the underlying strength of the economy. Is it this incredibly worst winter we've ever had on record kind of thing? I mean, I know it's a beautiful day in Atlanta today. I shoveled 8 inches of snow last night and this morning again, and we're nearly at the all-time record high for snow. We're certainly near the all-time record high for cold and ice in Chicago. So it's a horrible winter, but it's been a horrible winter in a lot of the country. So there's been some concern. Well, maybe people aren't buying, they're not shopping because it's too cold to go out. And we are seeing trends to online shopping increase, but it's not making up the difference. Is that what it is? Is it that, you know, there really is, has not, people are not even earning where they were back before the Great Recession started. So is that finally catching up to us? So we're spending, but we're not spending a lot. What about credit? People are really freaked out about extending lines of credit and getting new lines of credit. People are buying houses. Fewer people are buying houses with mortgages. So we're seeing a huge influx and have seen over the last few years of cash buyers. Some of those are private equity. Some of those are hedge funds. Some of those are people who are empty nesters who are downsizing and they're taking their cash. If they have cash, they've paid off their mortgage and they're just buying something less expensive. So they're doing fewer mortgages. The big banks announced, one of them this week announced that they are going to fire another 5,000 people because they don't seem to need them. So all of those things point to a housing market that you might, in the headlines, think is doing really, really well. And I'm here to tell you, not so fast. And when you look at this negative equity rate, you realize, I think, one reason why we're not seeing the kind of movement that you would see. People can't sell if they're going to lose money. They can't afford it. They can't come to the table with a checkbook. They would have to liquidate other stuff. And so they're thinking, well, I'm hearing the home prices are rising. Maybe I just stick it out for a few more years. And at least I can get back to even. Right? It makes sense. And yet, what's happening with that? Not so much. The other problem that we're facing is that at the end of 2013, the IRS forgiveness for phantom income went away for a primary residence. So up through the whole Great Recession, there was a special thing going on. It was like a get-out-of-jail-free card. If you were underwater with your primary residence and you sold it or it went into foreclosure, you did a short sale, and there was a deficiency, the lender forgave the deficiency, and then the IRS forgave the deficiency because the deficiency is normally treated as income. Now, if you have a rental property, it was always treated as income. There was always going to be tax to pay on that forgiveness. But for a primary residence, no, there wasn't until now. Because as of January 1st, 2014, that went away. Excuse me. That provision in the IRS went away. And I think that there are those of you out there who are going, I'm going to have a $50,000 loss if I sell my house now, and that means I'm probably going to pay something like $20,000 to the IRS into the Georgia Department of Revenue. No way, I might as well live here for a little while longer. Maybe things will swing out in my favor. So fewer homes are getting put on the market across the country, not just in places like Atlanta, but it's perpetuating a down cycle. And so Lawrence Yun was out there and he was showing us what's happening. And what's happening is that home sales are kind of falling off a cliff. Not a huge cliff. Not like 2008 and 2009, but it doesn't look really good. The trend lines don't look good. And so some people are doing great, right? People, you know, in New York City, where there's definitely not enough homes to meet demand and everybody seems to have $2 million to spend on a house. Okay, they're doing fine. San Francisco and Silicon Valley that just minted another 400 millionaires, multi-bazillion millionaires, they're doing fine. But there's a whole lot of places around the country that are not doing fine. And I think they're not doing fine in part because you've got this issue of negative equity. And think about what your own home is worth. Think about what it is that you have, that you own, that you would have to give up, that check that you would have to write. And you might be having second thoughts. And the truth is, you can't have a robust real estate market, even if there's lots of buyers out there, even if we're still near historic interest rates, if there's nothing for them to buy. And inventories are really low. Home builders are having trouble, other than the huge big few huge big companies that managed to survive the downturn, right? Companies are having trouble getting money from banks. They lost a lot of money on home builders. So the mom-and-pop builders that might go out and build 30 houses here and 100 houses here, they're not building them. And so the number of homes that are being started should be at 1.5 million, and it's like half of that. Maybe it's at a million. It's nowhere near where it should be, and then you've got a lousy winter on top of it. And then the other thing that's kicking in here, and I think is really important, is the fact that a lot of people are like, well, I would buy, but mortgage interest rates were at 3.5% last year. Now they're 4.5%. Affordability is down. Why don't I just wait and see if they go down again? Talk about shooting yourself in the head. 18 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. We're going to take some calls coming up next on News Talk WSB. 24 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB. Don't forget that you can check in with me on Twitter at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Also, thinkglink.com, which is a great place to go for all kinds of information about real estate. Eric joins me on the line now. Hey, Eric, welcome to the program.
Hi, Elyse.
Hey, what's going on in your world?
Well, actually, I just came from a real estate seminar. Not like the full deal. It was an intro seminar. It's called Your Real Estate Today. And it was because I saw an infomercial from Scott Yancey, the Flipping Vegas guy, on TV. And so I went to look at it. Hurt. I'm always looking to get more information on real estate and investing, something I want to get into more and more as I get older. I've got a single rental property. Kind of over-invested in that. I bought it back at the peak of the boom, and now it's quite a bit down, but I'm paying for it with the rental income. And I wanted to get your thoughts on kind of if you've heard of Your Real Estate Today at seminar. Is it just like the others, or is it kind of worth your time?
Well, let me ask you something. Did you learn anything?
Not really.
And you know why? Here's why. Because these seminars are designed to get you to shell out money, more money. So you go and you get your freebie, and then they want you to write a check. Did you write a check today?
No, of course not. I don't.
Did they ask you to write a check today?
Of course.
Of course. So I have a problem with this stuff because I don't think that this guy is. If you look at their website, which I did because I knew you were going to ask about this, their whole program is about selling programs. It's not really about teaching you to buy and sell real estate. Because if they did that, that would just set up competition for themselves. What they're doing is leveraging their celebrity, not leveraging whatever information they actually have. And maybe you'd get a modicum of information, right? But that's not really what they're all about. They're about selling programs about investing in real estate that you may or may not learn anything from. I believe in real information. So what I do is I write you know, books about it, or I do like my intentional investing series, which is just full of real information. And that's what I believe you should give as a person who has been in the real estate world for a really long time and has written all kinds of books about it. I just believe that it's really about hardcore information. So
yeah.
I'm not going to ask. I know a lot of these kinds of guys who are like, oh, pay me $1,400 for my seminar in which I will teach you my buy and hold strategy. Well, what's a buy and hold strategy? Well, you go find a deal on a property, and then you hold it. The ones who tell you that they'll be able to teach you how to do it with nothing down, and I can get you 2% interest rate, and blah, 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 it's a bunch of lies. It's not there. It's not real in the real world. I'm married to, as you probably know because you listen to my show all the time, I'm married to Sam, who's a real estate attorney. He handles clients who have been investing in real estate for 10, 20, 30 years, who own 5,000 units, 3,000 units, 2,000 units. They've never gotten nothing down deals. It's just not how the real world works. It's the way that this imaginary world of real estate works, which is designed to entice you to come to a free program, get out your checkbook, and buy something else. It's a little bit the way that the timeshare world works. And I'm sure that you might get a little bit of information out of it, but I would much rather see you take your $1,400 or your $2,500 or your $10,000, and instead of spending it on this, I'd rather you set it aside for a down payment, because any big lender out there is going to require between 25 and 35% down, which is in my book, you know, my intentional investor series. So if you're interested in really learning how to buy and think about investing in real estate, right, you can go to thinklink.com or you can go to thinklinkstore.com and use WSB, get 25% off, and buy a series of information. You can just buy the e-books. They're cheap. You can buy the whole thing. That's a little bit more. And learn something real. But I would take a pass on these kinds of programs. I've yet to find one that I think is so fabulous that I would pay $1,400 for. It's 28 minutes past the hour on the Elise Blink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find Elise Blink live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
6 minutes past the hour on the Elise Blink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, the website, thinklink.com. Sign up for our twice-weekly free newsletter. It gives you Glinkonomics on Thursday, because that's the day that all the news kind of breaks. And you get all kinds of great stories on Monday. It's a terrific way to stay in touch with what's going on in the real estate and personal finance world. And did I mention it's free? You can also check out our store, thinklinkstore.com, and follow me on Twitter at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Patricia joins me on the line now. Hey, Patricia, welcome to the Elise Glink Show.
Hey, Elise, thanks for taking my call. I listen to your show all of the time. Love your books.
Oh, thanks so much. What can I do for you today?
My fiance lives in Maryland. He's been divorced since about 2007. He still has a home with the ex-wife who's living in the home.
Mm-hmm.
He last lived in the house about 2005. Recently, the house was in foreclosure. He refinanced it against my better judgment, but he didn't want the house to be in foreclosure. He's been dealing with lawyers for a year and a half. They can't seem to give him an answer on how to get his name off of the deed because she won't agree to sell the house.
So the problem that he's having, I mean, he refinanced the property, but at the time that he refinanced the property, what he should have done was get her to sign an agreement to get her name off the title. And otherwise, the house would have been lost. So the time to have the most amount of leverage would be to say, look, I'm going to refinance this, and you're going to agree to take your name off the title, and you're going to have to move in X period of time because the house is worthless.
But the problem is, Elise, we're not dealing with someone who appears to be stable.
Ah. So oh, well, then there's... Of course, if she was wonderful, he'd probably still be married to her, right?
Right. I mean, he can't even go into the house when she's there. She's threatened to kill him.
That's horrible. Do they have kids together?
Do they have what?
Children?
Yeah, they have two grown kids. They don't even really go into the house. Some of the utilities have been shut off.
So why did he refinance the house and not just let it go into foreclosure?
Because he wanted to maintain his credit. So now, for the last 5 months, he goes and picks up the check at the house and he pays it online. So she's been paying it on time for the last 5 months.
Okay. So he could bring a partition suit, which is what happens when two people co-own property and one of them won't sell. And
what kind of suit is it?
I believe it's called a partition suit, where you have to find the right kind of a lawyer. It's a litigator who specializes in real estate issues. And you can sue the party to sell the property.
And what is the best way to find a reputable real estate attorney?
So the way that I like to do it is I like to go to the local bar association. So if it were in Atlanta, it would be the Atlanta Bar Association, Chicago Bar Association. I'm sure, what town is he in? Baltimore?
He's in, I can't remember, Fort Washington.
Okay. There's the nearest big city. Probably has a bar association that covers, you know, that community. Or you could go to the state bar. And each of these bar associations has a committee that's a real estate committee. If you were interested in estate work, they have an estate committee. And this committee is responsible for programming that helps keep all the real estate lawyers up to date on the latest laws and the changes and what's going on. So the people who go to those committee, who's part of the committee, whoever's heading it up, they're the most engaged and I find the most connected and the most knowledgeable in the local area. So you call the bar association and say, who's the head of the real estate committee? You get that person on the phone and you say, this is my problem. I need some solutions. I need a really smart, strategic lawyer who can help me think of original solutions to deal with my crazy ex-wife who won't give up the ghost here. And how do we do that? And then that attorney, if that attorney is not the right attorney, that attorney will know who is going to be the right attorney. And I'm going to tell you a little story about how important it is to get to the right attorney. Because when you're at the right attorney, things happen. It almost seems like magic. So we have a friend who was engaged for a long time to a woman from another country, and she finally was able to get her papers in order. She moved to the country. They got married, and in 6 weeks, she was like, I'm done with this marriage. I got to go back to my country. And she was literally going to get on a plane the next day. And if she had done that, our friend would have never been able to get the divorce. And so he went to see a divorce attorney, very highly reputable attorney, and the attorney's like, oh, I'll need a $10,000 deposit, it's going to take you 2 years, and blah, blah, blah. And he came to see Sam, and Sam's like, let's see if we can do something else. And Sam found a lawyer, a different lawyer, who said, right, under the state's mental cruelty statute, you can get almost an instant quickie divorce if it meets these conditions and all this sort of stuff. And sure enough, it did, and she didn't contest it, and they were able to get divorced in 2 weeks.
Wow.
So it's not that the other guy isn't a great attorney. He is a great attorney, but this particular situation needed a different perspective. It needed somebody who was willing to think outside the box, who really knew the law, and was able to be strategic in how to let this woman who just wanted to get on a plane and go back to her home country, how to let that happen with maintaining our friend's, you know, whole situation.
Right.
And so when I talk about, you know, finding the right attorney, you really have to know what the issues are for yourself, and you need somebody strategic like this who's able to think outside the box. So that's my suggestion to you, and there are a lot of great attorneys in that part of the country. I'm sure if your fiancé pursues it like this and says, I need some help, is it a partition suit? Is it... You know, is there something else that we can do?
Great. Thank you so much.
I hope that this helps, Patricia. And
oh, yes, it does.
Will
it
you
does.
Let me know what happens?
I will.
Terrific.
Thank you so much, Elise.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Take care.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. You too. It's 44 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Again, really strategic, guys. It's all about the strategy. Jim joins me on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the Elise Glink Show.
Hey, Elise, thanks. Hey, we had just let our house go into foreclosure. We'd been working with the banks for over a year, and as you probably know, they don't want to work with you.
So sorry.
And we just heard what you said. And it was a $750,000 note. The house dropped to $500,000. What kind of penalty are you thinking will be assessed from the federal and the Georgia?
So when did it happen? When did it actually happen that the house got, you know, what's the date?
I think it was February 14th.
Is when the actual date was? So
yeah.
You're in this year, not last year?
Correct.
Oh, that's awful. It's awful on so many levels. So you're looking at a $250,000 deficiency. Let's start at the top. Did the bank forgive it completely, like we'll never chase you for it kind of forgiveness? And do you have that in writing?
No, we don't.
You got to have that in writing. You got to see
okay.
if you can get that in writing, because there's two things going on here. There's the bank forgiving it, which is the first thing, because if they don't forgive it, then they'll ultimately sell the property. It'll sell at a loss, and then they can sell the debt, the deficiency, and then chase you for the rest of your life, right? I mean, you could just have bill collectors and all this sort of stuff. So that's one piece that you have to get into place. So then what happens is they report to the government that there was a $250,000 deficiency, which looks like a gift to you. So basically what happens is whatever your income is, and I'm assuming you have a decently sized income, it looks like you just added $250,000 in income on top of that. So if you're earning $250,000, it now looks like you earned $500,000. And that would push you, obviously, to the top marginal tax rate for that, you know, income that's above, right? Because we have a progressive tax. So whatever the top piece of that falls into the top tax rate, that's what it would be. So it would be 39, whatever that is, percent on the top piece of that if you get that high. And then the state tax, whatever that would be. So it usually works out to be about 45 to close to 50%, or on $250,000, about $125,000.
Okay. To throw another twist in it, they've come back this week and said if someone, a family friend or someone, wants to buy it and, for you, we'll look at entertaining that.
What do you mean by that? What do they mean by that exactly?
They said if you have a friend that wants to put an offer on the house,
mm-hmm.
bring them to us, and we'll look at selling it to them, and you can rent it back from them.
Okay, but unless they're going to buy it for
$750,000, right?
Then you know, if they buy it for $750,000,
no one else will buy this place for $750,000.
Right. So once they buy it, that price is set in stone. So if they buy it for $500,000 and the note is $750,000, that's the $250,000 that's the missing money.
Correct.
So
okay.
you're stuck in this situation of now you owe the $250,000.
Gotcha. And will that be assessed for next year's taxes?
Yes, it wouldn't be for 2014. You'd pay it in 2015. It's
okay.
The 2014 tax year that's payable in 2015.
Okay.
But here's what I want you to do. Did you work with an attorney on your foreclosure?
Yeah, I did and didn't. I mean, he just said, Jim, it is what it is, and, you know, I can negotiate with a bank and charge you hourly fees, but you ought to just work with them, and if they don't, they don't, and just move on.
Okay, so is he a real estate attorney?
Yes.
Okay, so I respect what he's saying, but there's a very important part that you need to get in writing that he can probably get them to do. And frankly, I wish he'd been smart enough to tell you to do this by December 31st. Okay, so I don't know what happened between December 31st and February 14th, the 6 weeks, but you would have then been in the IRS forgiveness part for a primary residence, which obviously, as you can see, is worth about $125,000. But whatever, bridge under the under, unless you can make the case that you actually abandoned the house, it doesn't sound like you did. So what you need now is you need to get that in piece in writing that they are forgiving the loan and are never going to chase you for it. And it is worth paying him to help you with this.
Gotcha.
Because you got to get it in writing. What I don't want to have happen is for them to sell the deficiency and you wind up in a situation where now they're charging you, they're coming back and it's collection and it's debt and it's the next 20 years of your life. Just get them to forgive it and forget it. And they can do that. And then you can work on the IRS part of it. And you may be able to structure a payout over a number of years with the IRS, or you may decide to go into bankruptcy or whatever it is. But you got to get that first piece done with the bank so that this doesn't chase you for the rest of your life. Let me know what happens, Jim, okay? ThinkGlink.com. You can email me through there if you need more information. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We're going to do a prize pack next on News Talk WSB. 5 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB. I want to do a quick weekend prize pack. It's the McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack giveaway. It includes a four-pack of tickets to the Atlanta Spring into Summer Boat Show, March 7th through the 9th. Ooh, that's Sam's birthday, at the Gwinnett Center. And a four-pack of tickets to Medieval Times Dinner and Tournament at Sugarloaf Mills. That was my son Michael's absolute favorite thing to do when he was a kid. Every year for his birthday, he always wanted to go to Medieval Times. Anyway, that prize pack is worth $244. We are going to give it away to the fifth caller. The prize pack line number, 404-741-0750, 404-741-0750. We're going to take it, the fifth caller. Be nice to Andrew. He is answering your calls today. Crystal will be in a little bit later. Good luck to everybody. I want to talk for just a moment before the top of the hour, just a little bit about what else I see going on this week in real estate. It's a very, very interesting time. And we have this just sort of interesting confluence of things that are going on in this country. And I have been saying, if you've been listening to this show for a long time, you know that I feel that real estate and jobs are very closely tied together. So earlier in the show, I talked about how there's been this sudden downturn in what's going in purchases and in pending home sales, and Lawrence Yun from the National Association of Realtors said that there's all kinds of interesting possibilities for why this is actually happening, right? And was talking about how home prices have jumped up, but income is up only 4%. It's still, if you look at median income, it's not where it was prior to the recession beginning. And also, while we've added 8 million jobs, we aren't even back to where we were before the Great Recession. We're still short on jobs from that. And plus, we've had all kinds of people who should have been working, particularly young people, who are not working, or people who lost their jobs and got them back at half price or two-thirds the income. And so we're looking at a whole number of factors, from the idea that mortgage interest rates are at 4.5%, historically a great rate, but people are still remembering that their friends got 3.5%, and they're thinking rates are going to go down again, so they're not buying. We've got home builders out there who can't get loans that they need because the banks don't want to lend it to them, and they're not building, so people aren't selling. People aren't selling because their homes are still underwater. Remember in Atlanta, we talked about how effectively 54% half of all the people who have mortgages are underwater or functionally underwater, effectively underwater, because they have either they're at parity, or they just have, you know, a slight bit of equity. But once you factor in the costs of sale, that they wouldn't have, that's really enough, not enough equity for them to actually do anything either. So when you start to add up all of those things, you realize that affordability is coming down from an all-time record high, right? So it's harder to buy a house. It's still the fifth or sixth best time in history to buy a house. But a third of Americans are bypassing mortgages. That means they're going to buy with all cash and less expensive. And the refi market is about to collapse in 2014 to a 15-year low at least, because mortgage interest rates are on the rise. So if you think, and this is where I want to leave you for today, we're going to pick this back up again. Mortgage interest rates are at 4.5% for a 30-year fixed. By the end of this year, unless we fall into a recession, which nobody's expecting at this moment, mortgage interest rates will be over 5% by the end of 2014. If you're going to buy, you might want to buy now. I'm Elise Glenk, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, on News Talk WSB. Don't forget to check out my website, thinklink.com. Follow me on Twitter, @Glink, @GLINK, and check out thinklinkstore.com. Stay tuned. Be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB.